For March 16th, 2017, it's the Lullabot Podcast. It's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 207. I'm Matt Cleave, a senior developer at Lullabot. With me, as always, front-end dev extraordinaire, Mike Herschel. Hey, Mike.
Hello, Matt. How are you doing?
Awesome. Hey, welcome. Let's just jump into it today. Let's talk about the people that we don't usually think about.
Yeah, the people behind the blue curtain.
Behind the blue curtain, yeah.
The Drupal.org infrastructure engineering team.
Yeah, Drupal.org is definitely vital to me as a developer. I end up, you know, looking at Drupal.org as far as issue queues or the API side, or, you know, there's lots of things that we end up looking at on Drupal.org, and it's just kind of something that we expect works.
And even developing Drupal, there's a whole bunch of processes, testing infrastructure that go beyond everything that, you know, the normal consumer sees.
Yeah, today we're talking to the Drupal.org engineering team.
Yep. First up, we have Tim Lennon. He is the director of engineering at Hestinet on Drupal.org. He's been on Drupal.org for 11 years and now helps run it. From Northeast Portland, Oregon. Welcome, Tim.
Hey, thanks, Matt. Thanks, Mike. It's really good to be here. I just want to take a moment to say thank you to Lullabot for being supporting partners of the Drupal Association. Your support really helps us out, and also for helping us out with the industry page initiative that we launched just recently. It's been really cool, and we're really glad to have your support and glad to be here.
You're welcome. I take full credit for that solely.
Yeah, that was all you, Mike. Yep.
Yes.
So also with us today, we have Ryan Aslett. He's the infrastructure QA engineer, Mixologic on Drupal.org. He's been on Drupal.org for 7 years, also now helps run it, from Portland, Oregon. Hey, Ryan.
Hey there. How's it going? Yeah, like echo what Tim said, I'm really glad to be here. This is kind of exciting to get to talk to your audience of people to hear what we do. Yeah. So it's kind of fun. Cool.
Thanks. And finally, we have Neil Drum, a senior technologist at the DA. Drum, with two M's at the end, on Drupal.org, has been on Drupal.org for over 13 years. User ID 3064, coming in from Brooklyn. Welcome, Neil.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Awesome.
Glad you're here.
All right. So I was, I put together a whole sheet of questions, and at the end of it, I just kind of found myself wondering, what do you actually do? Why don't you just FTP the files up to GoDaddy and kind of just get on with your lives?
Oh man, wouldn't that make things easier? No, you know, I think there's a lot of things that we do, right? The mandate of the association at large is to support and promote the Drupal project, right? And for the infrastructure team, really the engineering team at the association, that means a place to put the code and a place for people to find the code, and a place to handle change management for core and for contrib, to make sure that you know, what's going on in the project is tested, to make sure that it's available for people to download, to make sure it's available to Drush and Composer, and just make it so that people can use the project and have a good experience with the code that's there, and also so they can collaborate on making it better. So, you know, that's kind of the goal of what we do, but as you know, it's a really big project, so the infrastructure to support that has to be scalable, it has to be robust, and it really takes some work.
So GoDaddy's not cutting it?
No, not at all.
A shared host would probably be pretty extreme.
Yeah. As some folks may know, we're hosted at the Oregon State Lab. The Oregon State Open Source Lab. And we have physical hardware in their data center. And that's where all the magic happens.
Okay, so let's kind of get some statistics right here. Concurrent users, some page views. Before you tell us that, Matt Cleave, do you want to maybe guess between me and you how many concurrent users?
Are we talking like a peak? Like what number are we looking for?
Yeah, like a daily peak of concurrent users. Okay. How many are you thinking?
1,500.
Oh, no way. I was thinking like 50.
Okay, well, see, I'm also thinking authenticated, Mike,
Right? Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's a totally different world when you're hosting a Drupal site in general.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I was thinking authenticated. I mean, you were thinking anonymous, right?
No, I was saying it was a smallish number. Were you saying it was supposed to be larger?
No, I was saying you said larger. I said smaller.
Well, we have the guys that know all about it. So what do you think?
As far as the concurrent users hitting our site, we don't have a real good way to measure that. Or at least I didn't have a way to measure in advance because we had a system set up, and prior to the podcast, I realized we don't have that system set up anymore. So, but we do have over 100,000 sessions opened on Drupal.org at any given time. So, because we've got such a large distributed infrastructure and so many anonymous users, about 90% of our traffic is anonymous. There's a considerable number of sessions, but on any given day, I would probably say there's probably anywhere between 2,000 and 5,000 users at the same time.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. So you mentioned you're hosted at the Oregon State Open Source Lab, and that's in Oregon, I'm assuming.
Yes, that's in Corvallis. The data center is in Corvallis, where Oregon State is. Yep, absolutely.
We're hitting the hard questions here.
Yeah, absolutely. Geography has always been not my best subject. But of course, we also use a CDN provider. So while our origin goes through and gets information from Corvallis, there are CDN endpoints all over the world to make sure that users in different regions have a responsive experience getting to the website.
Can you give us a rundown of like all the different services that Drupal.org provides? Like, I know we obviously have our issue queues, we have, you know, forums, and there's a testing infrastructure,
code repository, and it rolls releases of the code. And
oh yeah,
what else?
There's quite a lot. Let me separate the sites from the services and talk about them that way. So
okay,
the sites are Drupal.org itself, of course, which hosts documentation. It has support and forums. It has the project hosting and issues. It has users. It has organizations, and it has the sort of marketing material about Drupal to tell you that what Drupal is and to make evaluators understand why they'd want to use Drupal in the first place. So of course, that's the biggest and oldest site in the suite. Then we have api.drupal.org, which has the API documentation. We have assos.drupal.org, which is currently where we run elections and we run membership management for people who want to join the Drupal Association as an individual member or as an organization member. We have events.drupal.org. That's where all the DrupalCon sites live and how we organize DrupalCon. Groups.drupal.org is still kicking around, and people are still organizing meetups and things there. Jobs.drupal.org is our job board. Localize is where translations for the Drupal project are hosted. And there's also security.drupal.org, which is where the sensitive issues that the security team is managing with project maintainers are taken care of. So that's the sites themselves, not a small number of them there. And then the services that we do include packaging releases, hosting the code repositories in Git, doing code viewing with cgit, hosting the update system that serves every Drupal website to let them know whether there are updates to any of their modules or to core. And in fact, Ryan, I think you had some stats about how much updates traffic we get.
Yeah, our updates traffic is tremendous. We serve up about 14 to 16 terabytes of bandwidth a month, and that's about 47 million hits every day to the update service from every Drupal site out there asking about updates to their modules.
And do those still all hit at the same time? I remember there was a blog post a while back about, why are we all getting these at noon or whatever it was? And I thought it was because the instructions for installing cron said, here's how you can make sure cron runs on your website.
Well, in Drupal 7 and 8, there's actually kind of this funny bug where it's a variable that you set on how many days you want to wait in between update checks. But if you set it to 0 or if you set it to -1 or anything else where you maybe want to shut off updates, it hits every cron run. Oh. So if you have your cron set up every 5 minutes, we get hit every 5 minutes.
Yikes.
That just serves back XML, correct?
Yeah, that was designed when XML was cool. we're looking at doing a JSON version of it in the future, but don't have any exact plans around that quite yet. And yeah, we do see spikes in the Fastly dashboard or our CDN, like on the hour or, you know, popular times to have con configured. But that's all, you know, 99% handled by Fastly. It doesn't even hit our servers. So that's their problem.
That's still a whole lot of bandwidth for some basic XML. That's pretty mind-blowing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So that was a bit of a tangent there, but you know, in addition to that, our other services include obviously the identity of Drupal.org users and managing those across the sites, the testing service with Drupal CI, Composer, all our pre-production systems that we manage to handle any changes that we're developing for Drupal.org. We still host camp archives and mailing lists for the security team and the newsletters, all sorts of things like that as well.
That's a lot. Can you walk us through maybe what happens when a user tries to go to Drupal.org and gets through the CDN and they're using Composer?
I'll do my best and I'll let my teammates kind of jump in here. But so if the kind of user to origin model, if you're trying to access Drupal.org for anything in particular, right? When you go to Drupal.org in your web browser and hit enter, that request hits our CDN provider first. And so if the content they're looking for, whether that's updates information, whether that's a particular page, whatever it might be, if it's not cached at a local endpoint or immediately available at the origin shield, that request goes back to our internal infrastructure. Our internal infrastructure is mostly made up of VMs on a couple of different VM hosts, again, with the physical machines there at the open source lab. And so web requests get balanced across our web servers, communicating with a cluster of database and media servers. Composer requests get served directly from static files that our Composer facade generates that live on the web nodes. And then updates XML, again, served by the web nodes, but fronted by our CDN. So then wherever in that chain the proper information is found, it's then sent back up, cached at the origin shield and the local endpoint that recently requested it, and the user gets the gets their data back.
Gotcha. And GET requests just go bypass your CDN?
Yeah, that's right. So if you're trying to do anything with GET, that bypasses the CDN and goes straight to our GET server, which is set up with a hot spare and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So can we maybe talk a little bit about testing infrastructure?
Yeah. So our testing infrastructure is multiple pieces. It's the Drupal.org section where everyone's used to interacting with the issue queue and seeing their patches get submitted to the test bots and set up, and project maintainers can turn on and off testing for their individual projects. And what's happening behind the scenes is Drupal.org is communicating with a Jenkins instance that we have running in AWS. And that Jenkins instance is responsible for auto scaling up EC2 spot requests that are really large machines that are capable of handling the testing load of, like, say, Drupal core, because some of those tests take as long as an hour on a giant parallelized 32 processor machine. So, but yeah, we've got the Drupal.org side of things, the Jenkins part, and then the individual test bots themselves that are running test runners. And those test runners are all running Docker containers so that we can test against different environments. So we can try Drupal against PHP 7, and we can try Drupal against PHP 5.6. And we even test against the very tip of PHP's development lifecycle, because upstream tends to break things in PHP, and we tend to find them for them. So that's been kind of an interesting side effect of our robust testing infrastructure.
As PHP and Drupal have kind of grown up, and Drupal has grown into a project the size it is, security kind of had to become super important for the infrastructure and for all of the Drupal.org properties. Tell me exactly what it takes from your perspective to keep Russian hackers out.
Well, we do the usual things that, you know, any Drupal site would do. Update our modules promptly in their security updates, and helped out by that. I'm also on the security team, so can help. I'll know about issues when they're coming up. And look into security at all of the layers, you know, make sure we have our SSL configured correctly. Fastly helps us with that. And
another review. We limit our servers that to interact with each other on a backend network, so that we only have to expose those machines that interact with the outside world, in any way, and so that machines that are part of that backend network don't need to be exposed in any way at all to interaction from the outside world. Our access to things at the OSLs through a VPN. There's a lot of moving pieces here and there, but we try and keep on top of it.
Are currently all the sites on the same Drupal version?
Yeah, it's all big shared. Three web servers that they all serve all the sites.
Yeah, so are they all running Drupal 7, or do you have any Drupal 6s or Drupal 8s in the mix?
We unfortunately have groups still on Drupal 6.
Okay.
So upgrading to Drupal 8, like, that's not going to be an easy task for an organization like the DA. Is that on the table? Have you guys started to talk about that? Or I can just imagine the resources that's just going to take away from kind of normal operations.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because obviously we'd like to be on Drupal 8. We want to be keeping up with the latest and greatest. And it's something that we're excited to do, but there's a lot of things that go into the consideration. The biggest problem is that whenever we start a migration process, we'll have to implement a feature freeze. And whether we go one site at a time or try and do a couple things at once, a feature freeze and then a long upgrade process means a long period of time where the community is not seeing new features or is not getting the level of bug fixes that they need. And so with a small team, we want to make sure that we don't put that on the table until we feel things are in a really good spot, until we can find some resources to do that in a way that won't leave everyone hanging for too long. So right now, it's not on the immediate roadmap. It's something that we're going to plan for a little bit in the future once we've worked through some of the other priorities that we've got going on. And some of the work that we're doing in the meantime has bearing on how that migration goes. Because, for example, as you may know, we're looking at Drupal.org's tooling. We're looking at how the issue queues work and things like that. And if we were to make a tooling change, migrate everything, then make a tooling change, rebuild it, and, we could have saved a step if we knew that we were migrating something before we did the full upgrade. So we really want to make sure that we have a solid plan in place and that we've kind of delivered on some of the other roadmap things that are underway before we put the D8 upgrade on the table.
I was, in my head, I would think that Drupal 8 would handle the authenticated traffic a lot better than Drupal 7 does. And because so much of Drupal.org's traffic is authenticated, I can imagine that it's... Do you guys have any specific performance tweaks or anything that you're implementing on Drupal.org to help manage, those custom pages, dashboards that everybody's looking at?
First, we look for what's using up all the time on the database server, web servers. Use New Relic for that, and we'll contribute patches back to modules to improve performance. The only real big customization we're running right now in the Drupal layer I can think of is we have a patch to the forum module that makes one of the queries on forums more efficient. A lot of that sort of stuff went into Drupal 7 as it was being developed. And before that, we ran the press flow patches. And so some of those were kind of generated by Drupal.org traffic. And I think the last couple of months, I sent a patch back to meta tag module. And I think that's in the latest release there, for example. So yes, watching for slow things and making them faster.
Yeah, yeah. No, is Drupal.org using MySQL as the database or Postgres or something else?
We are using MySQL, and we recently bought some really big, fast machines to run the databases, which, because it doesn't seem like we've had to do a whole lot of work to keep things fast because they're already fast for us. So some of the problems we have with hardware.
Yeah, when you have a giant RAID array of SSDs, it really it can cover for a lot. But yeah, that's certainly part of it. Yeah, in terms of what we're built on, PHP, MySQL, kind of pretty standard. Not something that would be that unexpected in another Drupal environment.
What version of PHP are you running?
5.6 something.
Yeah, I don't remember the point version, but it's currently 5.6. Yep.
And for MySQL, it's MariaDB specifically.
True, yes.
Yeah.
Can you talk about Drupal.org Composer? That's a new feature that's you guys deployed not too long ago, right?
Yeah, that's the Composer facade that working with the community that I helped construct. It was one of those things where in all the drum beating to get off the island, we wanted to be able to use Composer as a efficient build tool, but we had Drupal 7 and Drupal 8 modules that didn't have Composer JSON files already in the repositories. And we also have a completely different data model for projects and Git repositories than normal PHP packages do. And so in order to kind of like make it possible for us to bridge the gap between where Drupal was at and where we wanted to be with Composer, we built this facade that allows all Drupal modules to be exposed to Composer so that people can build websites using Composer and have dependency management handled through that tool, as opposed to how it used to be where, well, my module needs views, but which version of views? And is there a conflict between other modules that need views and things like that? So
how does it handle dependency management if for example, a module doesn't have your JSON file in it?
The modules express dependencies inside of their info YAML files and in their info files. Mm-hmm. And we have always been parsing that data for the testing infrastructure, because whenever someone wants to run a test, we need to download all of their dependencies. And so between that and also Drush wanting to be able to figure out which dependencies, we already had a system in place to calculate what modules' dependencies were. And so we used that to seed the data in the Composer facade in a format that Composer was expecting. So we pretty much had all the data. It just wasn't sitting where Composer was expecting it to sit.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
We're talking with the Drupal.org infrastructure team. It's the website we use most every day, and now we're learning how the sausage is made. We'll look more into it coming up right after this.
Welcome back. We're talking with the Drupal.org infrastructure team, and we're talking about everything that goes into making Drupal.org Drupal.org.
Yeah, you know, Mike, just a couple of minutes ago, they were talking about their awesome servers that they bought to run the database, and I thought it was a little wild about still talking about, you know, hardware. I mean, it's been several years since I considered the hardware my website was on. And I know there's a relationship with Oregon State. Can somebody please just kind of talk a little bit about that and how it works? And
sure. Yeah. Let me talk about that a little bit more. I talked about it a bit before the half, but the relationship with the Oregon State Open Source Lab goes back a really long time. It's they've been hosting Drupal pretty much, and Drupal.org pretty much forever. And so when that first started, you know, owning your own hardware was actually still relatively normal. It was not atypical for a project. But obviously in the years since, cloud providers are kind of the way to go. Virtualization using kind of containerized systems is all come to the fore. So we're in an interesting position. We have a lot of hardware that is serving us well. It's still good. It's still in good shape. It's relatively new, some of it more than others. It handles the needs that we have. At the same time, there's probably some opportunity to do some things differently. So while our core infrastructure is operating technically on these bare metal servers we own, we virtualize most of that infrastructure. We're kind of running a little bit of a VMware private cloud kind of a situation for a lot of our machines, because that was a good way to use that old hardware and also create portability with our infrastructure so that if we do move to other kinds of providers, we're already set up to do that. And that was a big initiative over the course of the last year to make that possible. And then at the same time, you know, as we talked about before with things like Drupal CI, Drupal CI runs entirely on AWS. It uses a dispatcher that dynamically scales spot instances. It's a sort of modern auto-scaling architecture. So there are portions of what we do that are on the new model. It's also worth pointing out that last week we put out a request for information looking for potential infrastructure services partners. We're a pretty small team. There's actually only four of us on the engineering team in total, and three of us are here on the call. And we're in a position where we feel like we could use the help of an infrastructure partner. So those out there listening, we encourage you to take a look at that. It's on the association blog if you want some more information there.
We'll link to it in our show notes too.
So the Oregon State partnership, they're allowing us rack space, or I mean, is that kind of how it works? Or
they do a lot of things for us. We have physical racks in their data center. I've been there and seen them myself, where our hardware is set up, and they help us handle some of the things like the networking and so on. Of course, all the hardware management tasks that we can't do a couple hours drive away. They also provide data transfer. They handle mail relay service for us. There's a lot of different things that they do. For the longest time, our infrastructure kind of access control was actually related to their LDAP system, although it's been decoupled more recently. So, yeah, there's kind of a longstanding relationship there, and they provide hosting, but they provide a little bit more than that as well, and some services, it's just figuring out how to evolve the kind of physical behind the scenes infrastructure as we evolve the software side of it as well.
Right on. Thanks, Beavers. Go Beavers. Right? Yeah, you know they're a Pac-12 team, Mike.
Yeah, you used to work on the Pac-12.
You know the
website.
Pac-12 website's a Drupal website, Mike.
Yeah, I know. I heard the back end of it is just
it's pretty cool, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. all right, let's talk about the roadmap. So Drupal.org is constantly changing. People are requesting new things all the time, and I'm sure you guys are having to beat back issues with a stick. What's on the roadmap? What are you planning on changing and implementing?
That's a great question. So on our sort of official roadmap page, we talk about a few things, and we try to look a couple quarters into the future. We work in a pretty agile way, and we're not trying to kind of Gantt chart out the future of Drupal.org for the next 10 years, but we do have some priorities. And actually, I think before I talk about what they are, let me talk about where they come from. So, you know, the Drupal Association is a nonprofit. As I said earlier, we have a mission of helping the community, uniting the community to both build and promote Drupal. And so with that mission in mind, we take a look at the issues being requested by users on Drupal.org. We do our own sort of research about end users, and we do research with Drupal shops and developers who make their living using Drupal. And we take direction, of course, from our board about what the project needs to support it. You know, Drupal.org is the scaffolding for Drupal, the project, and so we make our priorities based on those needs, and those needs change over time. So coming up, I think as many folks know, the revamp of the project application process has recently been kind of deployed. It was actually a number of different issues, so a variety of different things have come together to make that happen. And so there's some follow-up work that we're going to be doing to that, and we're still working with people and communicating about what that means, because it's a big change for the Drupal project. It means that instead of all new contributors to Drupal.org sitting in a queue waiting for a manual review before they can make a full project on Drupal.org. Now any user can do that. So it's going to be an adjustment for the community at large.
Yeah, that whole like that you've been blessed by the community and go forth and make all the projects you want. You can now make a real project. That was really a big hurdle for a lot of people.
It was a huge hurdle. Yeah.
Mike, do you have any thoughts on that process?
I'm all for the new way. There had been some discussion on Twitter I saw maybe several months ago, and someone was lamenting the lack of Drupal 8 contrib themes. And part of that was that a lot of people just were kind of stuck in that project application process.
In the dark ages, I emailed a zip file to a guy, and he replied with "looks good," and I'm not even kidding.
That's pretty good.
It's gone from extremely arcane to significantly less arcane to somewhat rational. And you know, there's going to be a conversation, right? And every time a big change like this happens, there's a conversation among the community. We'll learn from what changes, and there may be future adjustments we need to make. Now, getting back to the roadmap conversation, some of the ones we know we need to make, a really important follow-up is we want to spend some time focusing on code quality signals. So since there isn't this like hoop to jump through or bar to jump over to create a full project, we want to provide clearer signals on project pages and in search to tell you, is this project currently passing its tests, or to give the results of, you know, Drupal CI has CSS Lint and ES Lint, for example. There's all sorts of we're using a combination of automated tools, and there are others that we can explore that can help us provide some automatic code quality signals, as well as we want to find a new way to incentivize those peer reviews, because as much of a hassle as the project application process was, it is a good thing to have another developer go through your code and give you a sanity check and point out what's going on. So those are those two elements, the automated code quality and the incentives for code review in a new way, are going to be big for us, just as a follow-up to this recent project applications change. Yeah, so roadmap. So that's going to be one of the big ones in the nearer term. Another thing that's big is we're continuing to support initiatives to do that promote side of the mission. So, you know, these don't necessarily have big infrastructure implications, but we're continuing the industry page initiative that you at Lullabot helped us out with.
Can you explain what that is?
Sure. Yeah. So, if you go to the homepage of Drupal.org, you'll now see three icons, one for media and publishing, one for higher education, and one for government. And these click through to portals with information about why Drupal is an ideal solution for those industries, and how you can build a solution with Drupal itself and, you know, third-party integrations and, you know, hosting providers, all that kind of thing, how you can put those pieces together to make a solution in those industries. It also talks about case studies, because we all know some tremendous examples. I mean, you threw out Pac-12 a moment ago, of big important sites in some of these industries that are running on Drupal. But that kind of information, those success stories, were not visible anywhere on Drupal.org as recently as even 6 months ago. We had some community submitted case studies. We had a small rotation of that, but it was really hard to find that. So this initiative was around trying to make that visible, trying to make success built with Drupal visible, and trying to tell a specific story to evaluators who are in specific industries. And so we're going to expand that further with some new industries and other things going forward.
Yeah, it's awesome. I know you guys launched the new homepage of Drupal. I think it was right around DrupalCon Dublin, right?
Yeah, I think that's when it was.
Yeah, it looks really, really good.
It was a huge change. Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, I think, you know, Neil had a lot to do with getting that pulled together. It is a big change because, again, you know, I talked about the Drupal project evolving. We went from the homepage being primarily a portal for the developer audience, that's part of the contribution experience, to being something that's also for the evaluator, also for someone who's new to Drupal and lets them know what's going on. So,
does the association own Drupal.com?
We do not.
Yeah, I would guess that's owned by Dries. He owns the trademark to Drupal.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right. Dries owns that website. So he has some. He has a team. I don't know if it's like officially the Acquia team or other folks that he works with that put that together.
Yeah. Okay. Right on.
There's been a whole bunch of changes in documentation lately.
Oh yeah, totally.
It's a new content type. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right. Neil, do you want to talk about the kind of technical structure?
Yeah. Yeah, it's two new content types actually. Yeah, it's also built with Pandalizer, which is relatively new to our stack of modules. Specifically for infrastructure, we did do some performance fixes there before we, I think before the homepage. The homepage is also Pandalizer now.
The two content types are guide and page. And guide is actually an organic group-based type.
Really, that was a big part of it was giving maintainers ownership of their little island of documentation. Because what would happen before is you write your documentation and there's no way to really remember that you did that, and no way to know if someone else was editing it or even to remind yourself to go back to it. So now there's ownership of these guides, and you get notified for comments on everything, and yeah, tools to kind of help you own and maintain the documentation.
Yeah, documentation in Drupal has historically never been the best. So it's great to see some changes. And I know a lot of that is kind of the nature of developers being developers and not wanting to write documentation. But, I know that prior to this, it was based on the book module. Is that correct?
Yep. And it's still, now we're doing hierarchy another way. So it's still kind of hierarchical, but it's all entity references.
Okay. And it sounds like the tools for people who are going to be doing the documentation are much improved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they absolutely are. I mean, just among other things, there's a WYSIWYG for documentation for people who don't want
to. What? A WYSIWYG on Drupal?
Imagine that.
Even Drupal 7, right?
Dang. Yeah, right? And there's even Neil deployed a great new feature. We've added a concept of callouts so that within documentation, there's just some nice template styles that you can use to highlight, a warning message if there's a security thing that you want to make people aware of during your documentation post,
really?
Or a version-specific callout. So you get these great either orange background or blue background kind of highlights in the middle of the page that say, hey, this thing only works in, 8.3 and later.
Okay.
So there's a lot of cool stuff in there as well.
Are there plans to depreciate the old kind of book module-based documentation at any point? I was going through some documentation from XML Sitemap a while ago, and I found a lot of old Drupal 5 and Drupal 6 documentation.
Yeah, so we're encouraging so there's two parts to this. So a lot of the core documentation and a lot of the I want to use the word core again, but I don't mean Drupal core. I just mean sort of like main documentation guides that have existed on Drupal for a long time. A number of those have been migrated. Not all of them are migrated yet. So like the Getting Involved guide, for example, still needs migration. And there's some volunteers out there who've helped us out with migration, and we're going to keep doing that, keep encouraging people to migrate. Part of the problem, though, is there was 12,000 pages of documentation, something like that. So it takes a while to get all that done, even with some automated migration tools. And then contrib maintainers, we've been encouraging them in change notifications and some of our blog posts. Hey, we've got these new tools for you. Go ahead and start using them. You'll have the ability to migrate content from your old contrib guides into the new ones. And we expect at that time to people to choose kind of not to migrate those things that are wildly out of date, like Drupal 5 documentation and whatnot.
Yeah, and something new we've been doing is actually deleting old stuff. There was an old archive book with a pile of not useful stuff, at least not useful anymore. And yeah, it's gone.
Yeah. So.
Do you have to be a module maintainer to migrate the documentation for like a contrib module?
That's a good question. So the maintainer has to create the guide for it to be migrated into the one to in order to associate it to the project.
Okay.
Anyone can start the migration, but to get that linked up on the project page, the project maintainer, you know, they have ownership of that page, so they're responsible for making that link to say this is the project's documentation.
Gotcha. So there's some type of entity reference between the project node and the documentation node?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So what if I have this really great idea for something that needs to be on Drupal.org? Where do I turn? What do I do? What's my next move?
Like migrating to GoDaddy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right.
Something better than that.
For great ideas like that, no. There's a couple of different ways to do it, of course. And it kind of depends on the scope of your idea, whether it's kind of a big thing or just maybe you see something that's like, hey, that's an obvious, like small little usability improvement. Let's just fix that. But we have our own issue queues, the Drupal.org customizations queue. You can open issues there. There's an infrastructure queue if for some reason your idea relates to the infrastructure. And there's also a concept of community initiatives. So we promote this on our roadmap page. Community initiatives are, it's really just a fancy wrapper around submitting an issue, but it gets tagged with something that we look at. And community initiatives are a way of the community rallying around a particular concept that they want to see for Drupal.org. So in fact, the project application revamp started as a community initiative. People submitted that using our community initiative template, and then it really kind of, you know, that discussion had been going on for a long time, but it gave it a place for that conversation to coalesce. And then from there, as we worked through the other items on our roadmap, that made it its way into our work plan. And typically with a community initiative, that's something we wind up working on together with people in the community.
A couple of podcasts back, somebody mentioned the ideas queue. Is that something that might be used too?
Yeah, you know, we don't really use the ideas queue for that kind of purpose. It's been talked about before. It's not something that we've formally adopted right now.
Okay.
How much bike shedding should we do to go back and forth on each issue before, you know, we can actually come to a consensus?
I really want to see at least 300 DPI, 1400 pixel by 1200 pixel high glossy photographs of the shed in four different colors before.
That's how you can select a color, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That so actually, I think we probably need six at least.
Well, maybe five is better then. Can't we just compromise?
I think page two on an issue is kind of where the line is usually drawn, right?
We need to maybe open up an issue to talk about how many pictures of bike sheds that we need for this particular issue.
I guess that's reasonable. What queue do we put it in, though? No, but
I think the question is truly like how much is because something like an idea of how Drupal.org should operate. I mean, is bike shedding something that's prevalent in these issues?
Sure. Yeah. No. I mean, the real answer is. It's going to depend on a number of different factors. So whatever issue is submitted, we're going to look at that through the lens of A, is there some kind of community consensus around it? Because if there's a big stand-up bike shedding fight going on about whether or not it should be done, we're probably not going to go ahead and get involved and make that a priority. We're going to hope that the community comes to a certain kind of consensus before we revisit it. On the other hand, if it's an issue that seems to fall pretty clearly within our mission and within some of the other priorities that we've set, there's a good chance that we'll come in and pick that up. So, you know, things like the project application process, it's been a long time. It's been a long time coming. And once that initiative was proposed and out there and conversation going around, once we had focused and kind of ticked some other things off the list in terms of doing our promotion support, and we looked around and said, okay, well, what's the next thing for, you know, contributor tools that we can do? That looks like something that's going to make a big impact. So we're looking for impact and we're looking for mission. And so sometimes there are ideas out there that might have a big impact, but they're just not immediately within the kind of constraints of our mission. Sometimes there's some mission work we have to prioritize that doesn't feel like a big impact to our internal community because, you know, we have so many developers who are part of our community already. They're already here. They use the tools. They know what's going on. But when we do those things that we need to do to kind of reach out to a wider audience, you know, people don't necessarily always understand that. So
speaking of bike shedding, there's been talk in the community about, you know, moving the hosted Git repositories over to GitHub or GitLab or something different and redoing our testing architecture and all that. And that's been bike shedded. And then there's been talk of trying to replicate some of the functionality on Drupal.org, which of course would take a good amount of work. I remember seeing a blog post, and this I just might be kind of fantasizing about this, is that there was some type of team that mm-hmm. was going to – tooling team or something like that was going to look into that type of stuff. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay.
So there was a group of volunteers, and the kind of technical advisory committee is their formal name, and that group is Steve Francia from the board, Angie Byron, and Moshe Weitzman. They were tasked with evaluating that problem as a whole, right? So their duty is to take a look at, you know, tooling on Drupal.org. Why is it hard for new developers to get involved? What are the pain points? Also, what are the things that are unique about Drupal that we would need to preserve if we did something differently? Kind of take a look at that stuff, say, what's the biggest impact to reach the goal of having a tool set that's familiar to developers at large, that reaches a wide audience, that kind of opens the pool of developers who might contribute. They've been working on that evaluation. There's actually been a couple of blog posts. Hopefully there'll be another one coming up reasonably soon. As far as that group, the TAC, their kind of end goal, their deliverable, is to bring a recommendation to Megan Sanicky, our executive director, about, hey, once we take an action, you know, after talking about it with the community, after vetting it with these different possible providers, this is the one we think you should do. And from there, we need to take that and say, do we have the resources to do that? Can we afford to do that? Is there something else that's more important to do first? Or is that the next thing on the list? So there's a combination of that kind of that group doing their evaluation, us doing our sort of internal feasibility study, and then landing on a final solution. I can tell you, I think you had it spot on in terms of what options are on the table. It's really, you know, do we continue to build tools for this ourselves? Do we build a pull request workflow into Drupal.org? Ryan, who's here on this call, has actually presented at DrupalCon a couple of times on that subject and outlined sort of a basic plan of what that could look like. Do we move to GitHub? Do we move to GitLab? Especially for something like GitLab, and especially given their recent data loss issues, we'd probably host it ourselves. But you know what I mean. So those are kind of what's on the table. There's no decisions yet, and I'm hoping there'll be another community communication from the TAC pretty soon. So we'll see.
Is it possible for people to contribute patches to Drupal.org? And if so, how do they do it? I know I was at a DrupalCon Bogota a long time ago, and I think Jeremy Thornson was there, and he mentioned that we could spin up, I think, a private environment for testing or something like that. Is that a thing still? Or
our dev infrastructure is something that we're able to share with the community. We have a handbook page about this. I'll send it over for the show notes. You send a request and we, you know, make sure you're a real person who has some development skills, and we'll put your SSH key on the server, and it takes about 30 minutes to spin up a dev site once one of us is awake and starts it.
Yeah, so from there, you know, those users, someone who's interested in doing that, they can file an issue in our queue requesting a development site. Again, we'll do that vetting process, put their SSH key up if it all looks good, spin up the site so they can get in and make their changes. And from there, they can roll patches for the Drupal org customizations module or whatever element of the site it might be that they'd like to contribute to.
Cool. So, Mike, let's have another visit from the genie.
Yeah, the magic blue Drupal genie.
The magical blue Drupal genie. So let's go through our guests and ask them the question. So if you guys had something you would like to change on the Drupal.org infrastructure, or if you'd like, you know, to be able to move something out of Drupal.org or, you know, bring in a third-party integration or something, this Drupal genie is going to get it done for you. Let's start with Neil Drum. So what will that Drupal genie do for you?
I know, it's a hard question. More time.
Yeah, but this, so the idea of this genie is he or she would do your work for you. So if you have a feature, and they would do it perfectly.
And it would
be great. So if you want a pull request workflow or something else, this genie would just snap its fingers and get it done.
Get the Drupal 8 upgrade out of the way and done.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Great answer.
That's a big task.
Yeah.
Okay, Ryan.
Yeah, I wish we had something that would take all of the data that we're getting from all of these different resources and aggregate it into a system where I can actually, like, where we can get really good quality metrics about the community health and, you know, how much people are using things beyond just our update stats page, you know, like, how many users do we actually have, and what are people doing, and what's happening? So, something like a metabase or something. Yeah, business intelligence for the Drupal community is what I'm hoping we have.
Makes sense.
Tim.
Oh, this is a good one. I've debated. In my role as director for this team, I'm probably going to ask the genie for a bag of cash. But secondarily, if I had to ask for something technical, There's an issue under debate right now about this relates to the composer workflow and to the notion of having kind of command line tools becoming the norm for developers, right? Mm-hmm. Or for using Drupal at all, really, is the point. And so there's this notion of creating a site builder tool, a kind of whether it's desktop application or somehow integrated to Drupal, however it's implemented. A place that site builders can use to build their sites that handles things like composer dependency management, that handles things like NPM or Bower for JavaScript related stuff, that can do kind of everything they need so that site builders can still build a site and can still participate with a nice clean way to do that. That would be great.
That's a great answer.
Mike Herschel, do you have an idea for the genie here?
I do have an IDNI.
The IDNI genie.
I do have an IDNI. It actually kind of builds off of Tim's answer right there, which is kind of interesting. So WordPress has this functionality kind of baked in where you can download themes and extensions or plugins directly from their admin UI. I would love to have Drupal do something like that, where, you know, you could browse modules from within your website's dashboard and have it automatically download, you know, the tarball managed dependencies and do all that kind of seamlessly, you know. Obviously, that would be something on a local environment. It might be a module that you have to enable, you know, because I cannot see, like, enterprise sites wanting this. But I worry about Drupal's barrier to entry for newbies being too difficult, especially with Composer and just finding what you need. It's pretty difficult. I also have one other thing that I'd like to mention here, which is Node 2.8.2.2.4.2.8, which it's actually a patch I submitted to Blue Cheese to kind of clean up some of the documentation guides. So I just want to kind of plug that for you guys. It was originally opened up from Joe Schindler from Drupalize Me fame, and I threw a patch up there, and it's looking pretty good.
I just started a dev site build for you.
Thank you. Thank you. So it's looking pretty good. Yeah, I was able to compile the SAS, but of course I don't have my local setup for that. Matt Cleave, what would you like to see Drupal.org do?
I can't disagree with Neil Drum. So having seen migrations and upgrades, I think an upgrade to Drupal 8 for all of the sites would be a huge undertaking. And if that were just magically done, that would be probably pretty great for these folks.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
I would not say no to that. I'll take any of these wishes. Does the genie give a bulk discount?
Sure.
The genie's been on the podcast a couple of times now, and I've yet to meet the genie. So yeah, I'll let you know when I do.
Yeah, please.
So
that blue cheese issue, I kind of want to go back and ping the original designers and see what they were thinking and get their feedback. So that's the only reason I've been lagging on that.
Yeah. No hurry on that. I was kind of being funny by bringing that up right there.
You're hilarious. Right.
So thank you. So you three work for the Drupal Association, but the Drupal Association needs resources, right? How can people help out the Drupal Association, give money to the Drupal Association so they can continue supporting Drupal.org and maybe hire a fourth or fifth person to actually work on it to help for that Drupal 8 upgrade?
Hire the genie.
Yeah, we got to hire that genie, don't we? The genie has bills to pay. That's a great question. And we appreciate support of all kinds, of course, contribution of code and things like that patch to help us fix the documentation. That kind of stuff is good too. But when it comes down to financial support, organizations especially can really help us by joining the supporter programs. So we have supporter programs that are targeted for organizations that are shops that provide Drupal services. We also have supporter programs for kind of end users of Drupal who maybe they use Drupal installations on a large scale and they want to give back to the project that made that possible. There's a lot more adoption of open source on the end user level than there used to be. In addition to that, for individuals, we have a membership program. So you can join and become a member of the Drupal Association. You can actually purchase or renew your membership while you're buying a DrupalCon ticket. So if you're going to come join us in DrupalCon, whether that's in Baltimore or in Vienna in Europe, you can also add on a membership to the association, and that supports us as well. So,
great. Thanks for being on.
So will you three be in Baltimore?
We're going to be there in Baltimore. Just about our whole team, pretty much the whole association is going to be there in Baltimore. So I will certainly see you guys there. Thanks very much for hosting us, Matt and Mike.
Hey, thanks for coming on.